Chapter 8. Monlow Harbour, Nerth. Continuous.
Where are we going? Asked Sonica after a while.
Bronzy was driving in silence, steering away from the army billets and out along a crude track that ran into the scrubland south of the Terracotta Palace.
Bronzy?
Don't ask questions, Petto, Bronzy replied.
I think I will. This
is bigger than you, Sonica, so shut the fuck up. You're supposed to be dead.
You don't seem too delighted to discover I'm not.
Of course I am, said Bronzy. You're my tightest friend. Of course I'm pleased you're not dead. But this complicates things.
What things?
Just shut up, all right? Just consider this to be your old mate rescuing you from the unpleasant attentions of the Gene Whips.
How did you know they were onto me?
Because I've been shadowing you all day.
They left the established track and went cross-country, following dry watercourses between the dusty tells. Bronzy ramped up the speeder's lift. The vehicle's main lamps picked out the thorn scrub and dunes in their path in a frosty glare. The further they got from the lights and fires of the vast imperial encampment, the bigger and blacker the night sky became, and the lonelier it felt. After 20 minutes, Bronzy decelerated and aimed the speeder along a deep wadi. At the end of an arid creek stood an old ruin, a place that might have once been a temple or, just as easily, a beer for livestock. Someone had lit a fire inside. Bronzy stopped the speeder and killed the drive.
"Get out," he said. "Follow me. Don't be an idiot. I can protect you, but only so far. Please bear that in mind."
"What are you saying?"
"I'm saying they wanted to kill you to keep things tidy. I asked them to give you a chance. So this is my reputation on the line, along with your life. Don't fuck this up for either of us by being stupid."
They walked across the sand from the speeder to the ruin. Sonica could smell fuel bricks burning. The flame light inside the place flickered and danced the shadows. They went inside. A small fire of fuel bricks and dry thorn sheaves was blazing in the middle of the baked earthen floor. A man sat beside the fire on a lump of tumbled stone, cleaning his fingernails with a dagger.
"This is Thaner," said Bronzy.
Thaner looked up at them, his face expressing very little interest towards either of them. He wore the uniform of a Bajalur in the Outremars. His face was blemished down the left side by an old las burn. Even without the burn, his face would have been mean and tight.
"You took your sweet time," he said.
"Yes, well, I got it done," Bronzy replied.
"You're Sonica?"
the man asked, still fiddling the tip of his blade along his fingernails.
"Yes." "You came out of Visages alive?"
"Yes." The man pursed his lips.
"That makes you either tough as a bastard or very lucky."
"Little of both, maybe." Thaner rose to his feet and sheathed his dagger. He brushed dust off the front of his uniform.
"I'm going to ask you a few questions," he told Sonica. "You give me the right answers, things will be thoroughly civilized. You give me the wrong ones, no amount of tough bastardy or luck is going to see you out of here."
Sonica smiled.
"Did they change the rules? I don't remember there ever being a time when an Outremar Bajalur got to threaten a Geno Het like that." "Yes, they've changed the rules, all right," said Thaner. "Trust me."
"I have no reason to trust you," Sonica replied.
"Yes, you do," said Bronzy. "Me."
The fire crackled.
"I'm waiting," said Sonica. "Who have you told," Thaner asked, "about the body at CR-345?
"No one."
"Come on, you're not fooling me. Who have you told?"
"No one," Sonica insisted.
"Not even my men, the ones I got out of Visages with. Bronzy knew. I knew. Everyone else who knew about it died at Visages. Except Dimmy Shiban, and I don't know what happened to him."
Sonica looked at Bronzy.
"What happened to Dimmy, Hurt?
You'd be the one to know that."
"What happened to him?"
Bronzy stared at the floor and didn't answer.
"So, you haven't told anyone. That's what you're saying?" asked Thena.
Sonika nodded.
"What about Uxor Mu?"
Sonika shrugged.
"All right, yes, I spoke to her about it when I got in yesterday, but she already knew."
"Did she?"
"Bronzy and I voxed her from CR-345, and..."
"When you told her," Thena cut in, "did she act like she knew about it?"
"No."
"No,"
Thena nodded. Sonika cleared his throat. The flickering fire was beginning to play tricks on him. He kept tensing as if seeing things out of the corner of his eyes, shadows in the shadows around the edges of the ruin. There was something, someone, out there.
"Look," he said, "I don't know why she decided to deny it. I assume she was confused or had her own agenda.
She denied it because she didn't know about it," said Thena.
"But Bronzy spoke to her. I heard her voice."
"No, you didn't," said Thena.
"I did."
"You really didn't," said Bronzy quietly. He put his hand on Sonika's arm. "It was an intercept. We weren't speaking to Mu at all."
"That's not possible," said Sonika. "She used the codes, the encrypts, all the..."
"They're way ahead of us," said Bronzy. "Peto, they know all the codes. They listen to us."
Sonika turned to look at Bronzy.
"Who's they hurt?"
"What the hell is this?"
Bronzy glanced at Thena. Thena shook his head.
"One of you had better start making sense," Sonika growled.
"Peto," Bronzy warned.
"I'm serious with this hurt. Someone explain this now. What happened to the body? Did you deliver it?"
"Yes," said Bronzy. "I made the rendezvous. I handed the body back to the people who'd made it."
"I don't know what that means," snapped Sonika. "I don't know what the fuck that means, Bronzy. What happened to Shiban? Where is he? Is he dead?"
Bronzy stared at Sonika. There was a hard look in his eyes.
"He was dead before he got on the transport," he said.
"I don't know what that means either," Sonika growled.
"That wound he took, the shrapnel wound here," Bronzy said, gesturing towards his throat. "Some of it was bone, nerthine bone."
"I know, that happens," said Sonika.
"You don't know, Peto," said Bronzy, uncomfortable. "It was in him. It was in him, and it was just a matter of time before it turned him. They knew that. They shot him. They would have had to, anyway."
"You keep saying they. Who the fuck is they?"
"We don't have to tell you anything. We don't what..."
Thena began to say. Peto Sonika had always been quick. The snub-nosed las pistol was in his hand and aimed at Thena before either he or Bronzy had a chance to react.
"Start explaining this mess now," Sonika ordered. "Right now."
"Oh, Peto, come on," Bronzy moaned.
"You shut up. Don't think I won't aim this at you, too."
"Put it away," said Thena.
"I want answers first," said Sonika.
Thena sighed. Keeping his hands clearly open so Sonika could follow what he was doing, he reached down to his midriff and untucked his tunic. He pulled the garment up, along with the vest beneath, and exposed the corded muscle of his right hip. Sonika could see the brand mark quite clearly.
"Oh, shit," Sonika murmured.
"The body was one of our people," said Thena, lowering his tunic. "It got recovered from the field before our retrieval teams could locate it. We needed it back."
"It was dressed as one of my men," said Sonika.
"It was a Hort sergeant called Lyle Wilk," said Thena matter-of-factly. "He was operating as one of your men."
Sonika had a million questions and knew every single one of them had an ugly answer. None of the questions would form in his mouth. He was struck dumb by the sensation of the universe as he knew it grinding out of joint around him. Since that bloody dawn when Visages had been sacked, and most especially since his meeting with Honan Mu the night before, total dislocation had been looming. Now, everything he trusted tore away and revealed nothing. No answers, no explanations, no single thing he could trust or recognize. Simple panic seized him. He aimed the pistol at Thana's head and squeezed the trigger. Something crunched into him from the side, and the shot went wild as he fell. The something was Bronzy. Bronzy had punched him. Before Sonika could begin to process that information, Thana had kicked the pistol out of his hand. It skittered away into the crawling shadows. Thana put a second kick into Sonika's gut to keep him down. It was a brutal blow. The air crashed out of Sonika's lungs, and he felt a deep internal pain that could only be organs rupturing.
"He's no use to us," Sonika heard Thana tell Bronzy.
Thana drew his dagger.
"Don't," Bronzy warned.
"He's a liability. We can't use him."
Gasping, agonized, Sonika writhed. He saw Thana coming towards him, dagger held low for the old jab and twist.
"We've taken him this far," said a voice. "Why don't we show him the rest? If he still objects, you can put that in his heart, Thana."
Sonika's lungs began to work. He sucked in air, choking, tears streaming down his cheeks.
"Petto," Bronzy was calling. "Petto, look at me. Petto."
Sonika looked up. Bronzy had pulled up his own shirt. His right hip was a good deal more upholstered in flesh than Thana's, but the brand was exactly the same.
"Oh, glory," Sonika wheezed. "No, not you too, hurt." "It's the mark of the Hydra," the voice said. "It's the mark we bestow upon our friends, the friends we can trust."
Sonika heard heavy footsteps crunch across the hard-baked floor towards him. A shadow fell across him, blocking out the light of the fire. Even in silhouette, Sonika recognized it, an Astartes in full plate.
"Alpha Legion," Sonika whispered.
"Exactly." The Alpha Legionnaire knelt down over Sonika.
"I believe you're a good man, Petto. Honest and trustworthy. I think we could be friends. I have no wish to kill you. But I will, without compunction, if you maintain this stance of resistance."
"Then stop lying to me,"
Sonika moaned, his voice shrunk by pain.
"I'm not, Petto."
"What's your name?"
"Alpharius."
Petto Sonika started to laugh. It was a ragged, painful sound.
"Lies, lies, more lies. I know for a fact that Lord Alpharius is in the Grand Pavilion right now, meeting with Lord Commander Namatjira. You're lying to me, so you might as well kill me now and get it over with."
"Give me your blade, Thana," said the Astartes.
"For the prosecution of Mon Lo, I will require full access to and use of your astrotelepath, sir," said Alpharius.
"Why?" asked Lord Namatjira.
The assembly was seated at the low couches as servants brought in the feast. Namatjira marvelled at the nimble finesse with which the Astartes manoeuvred food into their mouths using their huge gauntlets. Despite their bulk and crude size, these beings were dexterous and refined.
"Psychic power is a key weapon in denying the Nerthine menace," said Pech. "This menace," Namatjira said. "You have spoken already of this force of chaos, but I fear it sounds like Dark Age nonsense and superstition."
Alpharius smiled, expertly shucking a piece of shellfish that was dwarfed by his motorized glove. He slid the pink flesh into his mouth.
"You've seen it at work, my lord. How do you account for it? Lord Wilde insists on referring to it as magic."
"It is not magic," said Herzog.
"And yet it is," said Pech. "It is the very quantity that mankind has called magic since the very start of his history."
What Ingo and Thias mean, said Alpharius, is that there is a primal power in our galaxy that defies comprehension. It is foul, and it is powerful, and it exists sidelong to our frame of reference. It resides in the warp.
And this, you say, is chaos? Asked Namatjira.
We use the word chaos, but that term is very imprecise. It is a primordial force, and may be used by those who have fallen under its influence.
You've seen it before?
Yes, my lord, once or twice. It is a cosmic bane, a toxic effect that flows freely in some places. It subverts the mind and the will. It corrupts.
Will it corrupt us? Asked Namatjira.
Of course not, Alpharius laughed, shelling another piece of seafood. It is not some kind of plague, but it is deeply ingrown in the Nerthine society. It gives them access to many skills that we would consider occult. Psykers are our best defense against chaos. They will allow us to extinguish the enemy's advantage here. For the same reason, I would like the Geno Chiliad to be deployed at the front of our assault when it comes.
For what same reason? Asked Namatjira.
The Chiliad Uxors are rudimentary psykers. That will lend us an advantage.
So be it, said Namatjira.
He looked at Alpharius.
I'm trusting you, Lord Primarch. I'm trusting you to make a clean fist of this debacle.
Your trust is not misplaced, sir, replied Alpharius.
Dinas Chain appeared behind Lord Namatjira and whispered in his ear. Namatjira nodded.
My apologies, Lord Primarch. Much as I find this conversation fascinating, I must withdraw now. There are matters to attend to.
Alpharius nodded.
I understand. I, too, must go. Omegon has signaled me. Thank you for this feast, sir. It was a true and warm welcome.
They rose. A hush fell.
Everyone, Namatjira called out, everyone, please continue to enjoy this evening. Let nothing spoil your hard-won relaxation. My lord Alpharius and I must withdraw to consider the days ahead. Eat and drink to your surfeit.
Approval ran around the vast tent.
It has been my pleasure to meet you all, said Alpharius. I am convinced that, together, we will finish this compliance in under a week. Ladies, gentlemen, feast well.
He raised his cup and drank deeply. A servant took Alpharius's empty cup from him.
Lord Commander, Alpharius nodded graciously to Namatjira.
I have learned a great deal tonight, Lord Alpharius. My view of the cosmic order has been altered. I hope we may speak further on this subject.
Of course. Terra rest you, and the Emperor protect you, said Namatjira.
They left the pavilion in opposite directions. The carousing continued behind them. By the south porch, Namatjira exited into the cold night. His Lucifers were waiting for him.
Report, said Namatjira. Have you uncovered anything on Uxor Ruxana?
No, said Chain. But there is definitely a foreign agent at work in our midst. The spy has slain one of my men right outside the pavilion. He's too close and too good. We need to purge our ranks at once.
Namatjira nodded.
See to it. You have my full sanction. By the way, what did you make of the Astartes, Dinas?
Dinas Chain looked back at his lord and commander coldly.
Every single one of them was lying, he said.
At the west porch, Alpharius, Peck, and Herzog strode out into the night. Omegon was waiting for them. He had dismissed the perimeter guard so they could be alone. The four hulking, armoured figures fell into step and began to cross the open dunes towards their lander in the cool, violet darkness.
How was I?
asked the Astartes, who had played the role of Alpharius all night.
Imperial, Pech replied.
Masterful, said Herzog. But then you do have a certain advantage, Omegon. Besides, I think you'll enjoy playing the part of Primarch.
Don't we all? Chuckled Pech.
So, Sheed, said Omegon, glancing at the Astartes, who had worn the name Omegon in his place that evening. What's the story?
Sheed Ranko, master of the Alpha's Terminator Elite, was an especially large Astartes, who doubled well for both Omegon and Lord Alpharius in diplomatic circumstances. He shrugged his massive plated shoulders.
Grammaticus was here, trying to spy on the meeting. He took out a Lucifer Black.
He's good, then? Asked Omegon.
He's very good, Herzog assured.
But he's hurt, said Ranko. Busted up. I typed his blood.
Get a match? Asked Peck.
Yes. Konig Henniker. Apparently one of the army spies. Deep cover agent. Specialist.
He's Grammaticus?
Ranko nodded.
I think so. He's a sly one and very capable. The Lucifers are scared of him, and very little scares those wily bastards. We have to find him, and before they do. I've told Shear to hunt for him.
What are we waiting for? Asked Herzog.
Where's Alpharius? Omegon asked.
Out in the dune wastes, Sheed Ranko replied, tidying up another loose end.